Today's message will be delivered by David LaDuca, and he's going to talk to us today on the subject of helping the world communicate. David. Spaghetti. What more do I need to say? There's a book floating around in my family these days by Charles Duhigg. If you go to the next slide. The book eventually got to me from other family members, and part of it was who else had read the book. You know, sometimes you find a book by chance, but when certain family members of mine were connected to this book, I had to read it. I had to find out more. I needed to know what they saw in it. And I gave it a few more chances than I would have. I'm a picky reader. Charles Duhigg is a business reporter from the New York Times. He wrote The Power of Habit. And I liken it to many of the other UU sources. As Unitarian Universalists, we are inspired by many sources from many religions, science, history, current events, and even science fiction. There's so many sources of inspiration. And I think that Charles Duhigg fits in because of his optimism, his challenge, and it really inspired me to make a bold choice, a large change in the work that I do and have been doing for the last 11 years. He's not a doctor. He's not a psychologist. He's not a guru. He's not a saint. But I think that he does well to give credit to the other people that he learned from, the scientists and the psychologists that he learned from. And he includes the stories and the journeys of very inspiring figures. And so he kind of brings them together. Another book that floated around my family was a book by Dale Carnegie. And he doesn't exactly write books, but he collects stories from famous people. And you can see many different paths and doors open when you read his books. And I think this book was similar. Before I tell you what I learned from Charles Duhigg, I want to introduce you to some of the really inspiring stories that were in this book. And I'm going to go very gently. Yeah, does anybody know who this is?
Tony Dungy
is the first black head coach to win the Super Bowl when his Colts defeated the Chicago Bears. He did an amazing job with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers before he moved over to Indianapolis. His story is really interesting, and this New York Times author did a really great job talking about habits, talking about motivation, talking about an NFL team that didn't think of themselves as champions and became champions. Does anybody recognize this company? Yeah, that's Target. A very controversial thing happened. They had some artificial intelligence working on the things that you selected, the things that you might be interested in, the things that you were looking at in the internet, and they created a formula that was able to predict people that were pregnant before they even knew they were pregnant. It was really creepy. And he doesn't exonerate Target, but he uses a very interesting story to highlight how habits are formed and how you can kind of learn without really knowing what's going on. And it was a really, really interesting story about Target. Does anybody recognize this? Yeah, yeah. What is it? You're nodding, but yeah? Outcast. It's Outcast. So this is Hey Yan. If you know anything about Outcast, they are you might not know anything about Outcast, but they're in this book, and it's really interesting to know about pop culture and what's going on and how they became popular and how they weren't popular, but then they were, and how it happened and what, you know. And it's very interesting. So it's a book not about his personal journey. You really had to read between the lines to learn about Charles Duhigg himself, because he spent so much time really going through so many great examples from around history and the world. Do you recognize this person? That's Howard Schultz. Howard Schultz and Starbucks. Again, not completely exonerated in this book, but interesting, really interesting, especially focusing on that type of service that you get at Starbucks, how they created not only a brand because of their coffee, but because of how they treat people and how they motivate their workforce, and really interesting and really great story. If he's not the perfect person, it's very interesting. Rosa Parks. So a big turn from some of these other more modern topics to Rosa Parks. So a big section in this book is about Rosa Parks and how she was very different in some ways from other things that were happening in the civil rights movement, and how some things had happened before Rosa Parks that had never really, you know, gotten hold of what needed to be changed, and yet somehow something was different about her. It was really interesting, and I felt like it was a very learning experience reading this book, and it was great. Now, part of the thrust of this book is a very Unitarian notion that each of us has our own journey, that each of us is finding our way. And by using stories of Rosa Parks and Tony Dungy and Target and other folks, they really left this huge door open to say the reader is on a journey, that I was on a journey. And that was really important to me, because I have been doing this thing for a long time now, and it was starting to feel like a habit. It was starting to feel like a routine. It was starting to feel like I wasn't getting the kind of success that I had hoped for or that I thought could be possible. And I really started trying to take what he was saying about other people's lives and put it apart, put it into my life. I'm going to skip ahead a slide, and I'll come back to that other slide. My personal journey, which I did not submit to you, George, sorry, there's no introduction for me. I did not send you one. It's a very funny story about several places. I grew up in New York, went to high school and college, and I studied Spanish, and I got really high grades, but I couldn't speak Spanish at all, and I would meet great people from other countries, exchange students, and I'd be like, nothing. I've got nothing. I can't say any Spanish. What is wrong with me? And we had a Spanish teacher that put on a video of just basic television from Mexico. We didn't understand a single word. And he laughed at us and said, "You're not learning Spanish." And we were like, "Are you kidding me? Like, that's the name of this class." And we were stupefied. I went to college and studied Latin and Greek, which was total waste of time. But you know, I thought, oh, I get it now. Languages are not meant to be really spoken, right? So ridiculous. And then I married Beth. Long story short, I married Beth. And we found out about an opportunity to serve as Peace Corps volunteers in Suriname. So you kind of follow the map to the northern Amazon. We were in Suriname, and for 2 years, we were forced to speak a different language, and then I realized something really strange, that people do speak other languages, and now here I am speaking a different language, and it's like I became a different person. I was all of a sudden, you know, very comic, and that was new to me. I was not a very funny person, and I really enjoyed it, and I thought, wow, this is amazing. Do you think they do this in Spanish? You know, and I thought, I should go back, and I should give this a second try. We moved from there to South Carolina, where Philip was born. He knows that. He knows he was born in South Carolina. No big surprise there. And we joined a Hispanic community, and I started playing guitar right around the time that he was born, and speaking, you know, and singing in Spanish. Again, I was not fluent, but I was telling a few jokes, and I was starting to get the hang of Spanish, and I thought, it's time for us to have another try at Spanish and at becoming bilingual. And so we moved to Guatemala, that's the GU. And Guatemala is a wonderful place. We just got to go back for the first time since we've left there in 2008. And we had a really great experience. And I have notes, trust me, I'm not reading them. But my language teacher, she on the first day in Guatemala, she's like, "Hey, we're going to start learning Spanish and present tense and past tense and future tense," like in the first day. And I was like, "Oh, I know what this is. This is what we did in high school." I was like, no, let's not even do that. Let's give me a different teacher. And I said, "Is there a list of teachers?" "Oh yeah, go down the list, find one that plays guitar." And the very bottom list of was this young guy, and the two of us, we went to the park and we wrote songs and we had so much fun. And I was like, this is what I had in the Amazon. This kind of communication, this kind of, you know, talking freely and having fun and really getting into the speaking part of it. And, you know, the whole grammar thing, I'll get to that at some point. And I taught there for 3 years, about, I don't know, 300, 400 students at a time. And we came back, and my brother said, "Oregon." And I was like, "Oregon? I know nothing about Oregon." And he goes, "Well, we live in Woodburn." And I'm like, "You're still not ringing any bells." And he said, "Oh, the schools are all bilingual because of a large Hispanic community." And I was like, "We're there. We're totally moving to Woodburn, and their primary school was 95% Hispanic, and the middle school is 80% Hispanic. It's a very very loving community. They really welcomed us in so many ways, and the kids were able to continue dual language classes 50-50. Through their education. And when some people take an AP Spanish class as a senior, which I might have done if my school had an AP Spanish curriculum, my oldest son took it as an eighth grader and passed it as an eighth grader. I mean, the
he's very fluent, and schooling helps with that. And so becoming an English teacher, becoming a, you know, an ESL teacher, that seemed like a good fit for me, and I really jumped at the chance of helping people in the same way that I had needed help. I had needed help getting over that fright, that getting over whatever it is in your mind that makes you not want to say more than muchas gracias. So I really thought that I had something special to offer, and I became innovative, and I became creative, and I designed textbooks, and I focused on pronunciation, and I brought back those squiggles, the schwa, and I really created a whole curriculum for folks that were confused by pronunciation. And then I attacked grammar, and I turned all of English grammar into a periodic table, and my students can look at the entirety of English on one piece of paper and say, okay, great, we're working on this today, and we're off and running, and everybody knows what we're working on. And I call it an elevator in some ways, because in an elevator, you really don't need somebody to work the controls for you. You can get in yourself, and you can say, I want to go to this. And so because everything in its entirety, all of pronunciation, all of grammar, all of the goals that I have in my classes are on the paper, students can say, hey, teacher, I have a question right here on this page with this section, and off we go, and they control the elevator, and they can work on something basic, they can work on something harder, and they don't feel like they're being spoon-fed little by little by little. So I became what I thought was this amazing, dynamic, interesting teacher, and the fact that students didn't want to leave my class and go to level 2, that was a good sign, yeah? Everybody likes my class. I'm great. And then I read this book. And I remember that feeling that I have when I give a certificate to one of my students and they look at me and they say, gracias. And I say, oh, man, it didn't work. They are me at the end of high school Spanish. They didn't get it. Whatever I had, I didn't give it to them. I need to give them something more. And I didn't know what it was. So I really opened myself up to this book. And the book tries to treat habit like a very tiny interdependent web, just like Unitarians believe that we are all part of an interdependent web of life. Charles Duhigg created this little teeny tiny interdependent web inside of us, and it includes a cue, something that happens often, and a routine, some response to that cue, and a reward, something that happens right after that routine. And the craving just helps it keep going and keep going and keep going. And through really great studies and a lot of psychology and a lot of current events, he created this theory that says we have problems with habits. We can't always change our habits by just changing our routines. But in these special cases, we are able to change our habits, and you would be better off knowing all those pieces and all of those changes, and whatever it is that brought you to this book, there's a good chance that you can find help with what you need to change. This is great. It's a little frustrating if you have a very specific problem, because he doesn't handle things specifically. He goes to the specifics for other people. But your problems, you kind of have to figure it out yourself. And so that's where my journey kind of began. This is a match. Now, perhaps this match is not as important as the stove, not as important as the campfire, not as important as the lantern or the candle. But there's that old riddle that it's the match that lights all the other things. This match, in my story, is the smile that you give to another person. So I talk to my students. I say, why do you learn English? Oh, teacher, I want to learn to communicate. I just shake my head. I'm like, yeah, no, I've heard that one. That's not going to work. Why do you want to learn English? Oh, teacher, I want to get a $2 raise at my job. And I'm like, yeah, that's the reason. That is totally a reason. It's just not one of these reasons. It's a reason. And maybe someday you will get that $2 raise. But you're not going to get it several times a day. You're not going to get it several times a week. And the craving comes when you go through the cycle over and over and over again. Our habits are spinning very quickly. And the things that we do, our habits, they happen frequently. And these kind of goal things, these kind of decisive goals, I want to do this, you know, they're too far off. They're too far off. I have students that do really well in class. They don't do any homework. I have students that do really well in class. They don't practice with their kids. I have students that do really well in class, and then I invite them to talk to somebody out in the tutoring hall, you know, who's there paid to talk to you in English, and they just can't do it. And I say, look, with your goals, you're right. With your goals, talking to your kids or, you know, practice or doing homework or talking to a tutor, they don't match your goals. But what if we change the goal? What if, and I kind of created this, the cue was just meeting someone, just meeting anyone. And what if the routine was saying something heroic to make them smile? Now, I have students that are begging for more homework, and they want to go try it outside in the hall. Can I talk to that person? Are they a tutor as well? Sure, you can go talk to that person. Because they have the cravings that we all have. They want friendship. They want new vocabulary. They want inspiration. And making people smile is a really great goal, because if you say spaghetti today, you know, it doesn't really work 5 minutes later. It doesn't. It's not a cure-all. So using language to make people smile, it actually requires a larger vocabulary. Now you can't just be monotonous. There's no one word or phrase. It just does it. You have to learn new words. Here's an example. I was at a Mexican grocery store, and a woman in front of me was Mexican, and she had about 6 pounds of chicken and three cabbages and 28 handfuls of cilantro and potatoes and carrots and all the things that you need. And I thought, here's my moment. Here's my moment. And I'm not going to smile. I'm not going to say spaghetti. I'm not going to, you know, do anything silly. I'm going to use my Spanish vocabulary. I'm going to make her smile. And I said a phrase in Spanish. I said, una tina de caldo. And it just means a tub of soup. She smiled and she's like, yeah, I'm making a tub of soup. And we just, and I was like, that's what I want my students to have. Just a little bit of that, just enough of that, so that they'll think, man, that was great. Who's next? You know? And then they'll practice more, and then they'll practice more, and then they'll, so all of the goals that I had, learning pronunciation, learning grammar, that's all still there. But the match is really important. That's what I came away from with this book. Now, how many of us have had that teacher that said, try hard, thanks teacher, that means nothing? How many of us have had a teacher that said, show your work, you know, I just can't show you my work. I mean, what are you saying? Just tell me what to do and I'll do it. How many of us have had a teacher that said, do your best work? Again, you know, you're like super vague. Come on, people. Spell it out. Like the periodic table, I wanted to present to my students in a way that they could say, I can start this, I can start it today, I can get this done, let's work on this. And so I really thought about how to make people smile. And this is what I came up with. Do you know who this is? Does anybody know who that is? That's Barack Obama, but who's Barack Obama standing with? Her name's Christina. She is Cubana. She is hugely popular in the Hispanic community. She was like the Oprah of Univision. She was really, really popular. She talked to so many famous people, and she's great. She makes people smile. And so when I teach people how to make people smile, she's chapter one. Do you know who this is? This is Ellen Ochoa. She was the first Latina astronaut. She was the first Latino astronaut. She was the first astronaut Hispanic, and she's from Mexico, and she is wonderful. She was in a lot of the Discovery trips in the 90s, and she became the director of the Johnson Space Center. She's chapter two. She is so great. She's scientific. She asks questions. She likes to look for, you know, adventure. You know, so there's some of my students are like, I'm more of a Christina. Some of my students are like, I'm more of an Ellen Ochoa. Do you know who this is? It is Oscar De La Hoya. So I really needed heroes that my students would be like, I know who that is. And he is tough, you know, and he competes, and he can be crazy, and he can be loud, and he can be dangerous. And so you need heroes of many different types, and he's one of my heroes. And I have a lot of students, and I have male students that think of themselves as a Christina, and I have women students who think of themselves as an Oscar, and that is totally fine with me. Right? How can I not put him on the list? He's great. Cesar Chavez is an organizer. He brought people together. He made real change. And so when I have a class of students, I will have people gravitate towards their hero. And yet, I will still say, hey, let's switch it up. You can choose which hero you want to be, and we'll divide the room into sectors, but then we'll rotate, and we'll let you have your chance at being Ellen, and your chance at being Oscar, and your chance at being Cesar. And this gives them a really, you know, it directs them, it helps them towards their goal. Sometimes it's simple. You know the person, you have an idea of what to say, but sometimes you don't. Sometimes there's a language barrier, there's a cultural barrier, that other person is in a hurry, that other person is your boss, that person is angry, that person is frustrated with you. And it's hard. It's hard to make people smile. But by changing the direction of what I was doing in the classroom, I think that I put people onto a better path to reach their larger goals and to help them communicate better. Thank you. Here's what you can do. I have a Facebook page, David LaDuca. How original is that? I have a second Facebook page that's called Aprenda Ahora, and my students are often, I always invite my students to join Aprenda Ahora, and it has some Spanish, but really it's meant to allow them to start practicing their English. And I say, send me an English phrase, and I'll help you translate it. Here's a picture, what do you feel about it, and maybe I translate what they say. Here's something that you can do, if you'd like to. Visit my page, Aprenda Ahora. It's filled with, I don't know, 60 to 80 people that want to learn English. You could make somebody smile. You could come to Aprenda Ahora and just look at something that somebody posted and just say something back to them. Make them smile. Then tell them something about the picture. Share a picture of your own. Just get some kind of a conversation started. These people are wonderful, and there is a absolute billion people on Facebook. And who do you start with? Start with these folks. They're so nice. They're former students of mine, and they're just looking for ways to practice their English. And it's a great opportunity for you to just spend a minute or two and make somebody smile. And who knows? Who knows what will come of it? So that's a action item, if you'd like. Thank you, David.